Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back, thumping our way through another minute, Zach.
That's right. Well, one thump. We get one thump and then we cut away from it.
Yeah, all right, fair.
So
I didn't have any other kind of...
I know, It's such
I'm loose. Working with what I got here, right?
It's a lot of loose content on this one. So we get a good thump, though. The one thump we get, it's a real good thump.
Right at the start of the minute is just...
Very nice.
Beautiful.
It's a one thump chump. So we get the one thump, and then we cut back to Paul. And we do get, I mean, the thumper continues in the background. We can still hear it, but
it's not as prominent.
It's not the solid, the camera or the microphone is right next to the camera, right next to the thumper. And we get it, you know, in full Dolby surround sound goodness.
Paul's working his way back up to the top of the dune. And just like before, he's winded.
Yep.
Can't blame him though. It's a steep ass dune like we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
Thumper's been going the entire time, but Paul's just at the top of the dune, kind of crouched and waiting at this point.
Yeah. And something that I want to call out on the thumper, we're staying with the thumper because it plays a really, really big part in what we're seeing.
Sure.
Something that's new to our viewing of the thumpers is the reverberations in the sand that we see. We've not seen this before.
We hadn't seen it as obviously, because before most of our thumpers have been on mostly flat surfaces, not on a very steep incline. But yes, you are right. Whenever the thumper strikes, we see sand kind of begin to avalanche down the dune a little bit.
And I wonder if this is a byproduct of it being on like drum sand or something similar to drum sand.
I think it's just a rhythmic disturbance of a very loose sand at a steep angle.
When was the last time that we saw a thumper in detail? Was it when Kynes got, or was it
when... It would have been when all of the Harkonnen soldiers were disposed of.
Right.
Garbage disposal that is Shai Hulud's mouth.
But we don't see the thumper in like great detail.
No, in great detail, it would have been with Kynes.
Yeah. I don't remember seeing those vibrations and like the ripples in the sand that we see here.
There's a little bit of a, you know, a little bit.
Gotcha. Okay.
But also flat ground.
Right. Right.
Kynes. So,
So we get to see it, you know, making disturbances in the sand, which I thought was really cool.
We get a little bit of camera back and forth in this sequence between Paul and Chani. She's looking at him with anticipation, but his focus is not on her at all. No. He's just looking straight out in the desert.
Right.
It's a good thing Paul was looking completely out into the desert, not over at his girlfriend, because about 40 seconds in, we get worm sign.
Oh, do we?
And this is a fucking big one.
Yes. This is a crazy size for a worm.
Yeah. So much so that like Chani's face has now turned to like fear almost.
Yeah.
The Fedaiken as a whole just begin to rise to their feet. Mm-hmm. And even Stilgar in Chakops is like, whoa, chill the fuck out. Not that big.
Not that big, dude. Paul doesn't seem to...
He's not fazed.
Yeah, gauge that he's in a fucked situation right now.
I went back and I watched the Harvester sequence from part one.
Mm-hmm.
This worm sign, rough estimates, right? Because like farther distances in this one, there's a lot more like elevation off in the distance. And then there's the flat and then Paul's on an elevated scale. So
sure,
you can't like one-to-one. But it's at least two times bigger than what we saw in part one at the Harvester. So
yeah, and that worm
was fucking... I mean, it's big enough to swallow a Harvester, right?
Yeah, like the Atreides style Harvesters.
Yeah,
That's crazy, man. So my theory for that I mentioned yesterday, Stilgar said that he tuned the thumper.
Mm-hmm.
I asked you yesterday, how does one tune a thumper Today I'm going to ask, why does one tune a thumper?
Tomorrow you're going to ask, when does one tune a thumper?
No, this will be the end of it. But it's a good question. So why do you have different tunings on a thumper?
I would assume it's the aggression that the hammer strikes.
Okay. And what purpose do you think that serves?
Heavier strike is a bigger calling card.
That's what I'm thinking.
Bigger worm.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And Stilgar wanting to Lisan al Gaib himself into reality, I think, wanted to call the biggest worm. We even get over here where he said not that big, which means, at least to me, that he wanted a big worm for Paul. He didn't want like some fucking Weenie Hut Jr. shit, but he wasn't expecting.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. So Stilgar intentionally gave Paul a thumper that was going to call a massive, massive worm.
He gave him one that was a little hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Stilgar is like, he's trying to make this a story, basically.
Yeah.
You know, he said that the Fremen typically ride when they're 12.
In the book, he said that. He hadn't said this in the movie.
Right,
just to clarify.
Yeah, yeah. In the books, he says, you know, Fremen children basically ride worms. So, and riding the worm seems to be a pretty common occurrence amongst the Fremen. Like this is not.
Well, they don't have an interstate system.
So. Sure, very true.
It's the Shai-Hulud Turnpike.
Stilgar wants to make Paul's riding something of legend.
Well, and I think it's because Stilgar and some other Fedaiken will have to go back and tell the siege.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, fantastical stories are generally the ones that gather the imagination, or that capture the imagination of everyone way more than,
yeah,
he wrote a worm.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think this was something intentionally done by Stilgar, and we don't really get to that notion is not fleshed out in the movie at all. This is purely headcanon. But I think it makes sense.
I think the only fleshing out we get of it is not that big,
not that big. Yeah. So I'm just connecting dots, and I think those are good dots to connect.
I don't think that is an unreasonable theory.
Yeah.
For this movie.
Let us know if you disagree.
Or agree.
Or agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
So after Stilgar says, whoa, not that big, we cut back up to Paul and he's still waiting patiently at the top of the dune. I really do not think he knows what he's gotten himself into at this point.
He knows he can't get himself out of it. Well, there's only one way he can get himself out of it. And he, you know, begins to kind of rise to his feet and mm-hmm. He's like, all right, well, like, fucking guess this is it.
You're in it, man. You know, do it scared. And that's a, you know, common phrase. So just do it scared.
The camera stays on his maker hooks though, for a moment after he rises to his feet.
Yeah.
And we see, you know, one last look at his face as he takes a deep breath, and our minute ends.
Yep. Yep. That's where we end. So at this point in the books, Paul's up on the ridge and he's remembering the training that he's gotten from Stilgar and from other people. He knows that he has to, you know, judge the distance and get his aiming right and everything. So he's really just mentally collecting himself.
He's just doing a bunch of trig in his head.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get to see this on screen next minute. We actually see him do some of this stuff. But really, he's just, you know, mentally prepping himself. And I have to imagine that's what movie Paul is doing as well in his head.
Yeah, I mean, homie's locked in.
Yeah,
like he's
for sure.
He's judging how fast this worm is moving, because we can see at this point, you know, it is... it hasn't fully surfaced, but it's close enough that, you know, we can see how quickly it's moving under the sand. Paul has seen this before from the safety of an ornithopter, but he's seen it before. So he kind of knows what to expect.
Yeah. And once again, way faster than 27 or whatever miles per hour that we said.
27 and a half miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way, way, way faster than that.
Diving a little bit into the behind the scenes extras from next week, but since we're talking about it now, one of the VFX people in some of the extras from the Blu-ray, which go buy the Blu-ray and watch the extras. It's really, like, the amount of stuff that's in there is really cool. But one of them mentions that this worm is going about 50 miles an hour.
Damn.
Now, 50 miles an hour when you're in a car.
Considerable speed.
Considerable speed, but you don't realize how fast it is until, like, you're standing still and something 50 miles an hour drives past you.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Shai Hulud can grow up to 450 meters in length.
Yeah.
God damn.
That is a literal freight train moving past you.
Yeah.
And I don't know what speed freight trains typically move at.
I don't know either.
I guess we'll never know. It's not a way for us to look.
Certainly never has been written down or recorded. Ranging from 40 to 80.
Okay. So this is a literal freight train moving past you, or towards you, I guess, at this point. Yeah, that's crazy. So what do you say we get back tomorrow and talk about this worm a little bit more?
Yeah, we'll wrap up the week with a worm.
That's right. As all weeks should be wrapped up. All right, cool.
Oh, well, God.
If you want to reach out to us, we are on bluesky@doomminute.com. We have an email address, and that email address is doomminute@gmail.com. Reach out if you have any other theories about questions, comments, whatever you want. We're here.
If you just want to talk about worms.
Yeah, we're always open for that. So we'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute Podcast.
See you later.
See ya.